This episode is brought to you by Fetch. Fetch is a kennel alternative right here in Denver, not a traditional doggy daycare or boarding school. They offer one-on-one private pet care for all kinds of pets, both furry and non-furry. And their employees are experienced, insured, bonded, and background checked, so you can rest easy knowing your pet is in good hands. Basically, they know pets. I used to watch a Burmese mountain dog named Sven, who was just like walking a polar bear. It was insane. Fetch offers pet sitting, dog walking, pet taxi, medication administration, and more. And he hated going on walks. I could like walk him around the block and then he was like, he just liked to lay in the bathtub. So if you're looking for high quality pet care you can trust, check out Fetch at northdenver.fetchpetcare.com. That's northdenver.fetchpetcare.com. Today on CityCast Denver. The weather is warming up and more people are tuning up their bicycles for the summer. So we wanted to have a different kind of conversation about biking. We sat down with one of Denver's last bike couriers, who's been riding all over the metro for the last 11 years, to hear what he thinks is right and wrong with biking in Denver. Today is Wednesday, April 17th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. All right. Well, I'm here with my bike-loving producer, Paul Caroli. Hello.
Hey, Brie.
And we have a special guest, Matt Sanchez. Welcome to CityCast Denver.
Howdy. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So you're one of Denver's like last bike couriers. It's been a rough couple of years, probably. How are you feeling going into this summer season?
I think that instead of saying it's an apocalypse,
yeah,
I would say it's a change in the winds.
Okay.
You know, the paper game has cratered. We had like 60 bike messengers running paper, legal documents, all of that. As far as the traditional premium rush, Joseph Gordon-Levitt cutting through traffic, you know, like paper messenger guy. Yeah, it's an apocalypse. It's not good. There's like four of them left. I've had to transition into the food game. Now, the food game, we had like a local courier service called Confluence Courier.
Yeah.
As the apps blew up, it shifted. It's shifted. And we have a local service called Ghost Courier still running, and I run for them too. So like, as far as a traditional bike courier goes, it's kind of an apocalypse, but it's a really interesting transition because there's a lot of people out there hustling the food game. And I actually consider our people out there doing apps and all of that working the same thing. It's almost like Walmart came in. Right. I mean, there are, when I started, I was 108, you know, and everybody knew me as 108. But now on the street, a lot of times it's, hey, Sanchez, because it's a primarily Spanish speaking kind of under the radar culture. There's this group of Venezuelans out there that just blow me away. They're hustling from like 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. I see them out there every day.
Doing courier work?
Doing for the apps.
Okay, like but Uber Eats, like DoorDash?
Yeah, like Uber Eats and DoorDash. But you know, in a sense, they're really doing the same thing without any of the glamour. But I've got the utmost respect for them. It's cool to watch them grow and learn and do their thing. Am I a big fan of giant corporations coming right in and undercutting it? We've lost a lot of rights. Old messengers used to have benefits. We used to have, you know, hourly.
You have a union of some kind, or how
we even had
work?
A union. We had like a Denver bike messenger union. Shout out to Jay Bone. He's an old messenger from back in the
him.
Day.
Yeah.
He did a lot of advocacy work. And as the big companies come in, they've just really undercut it. You really, as a worker, have few and far between rights, you know, but they're doing the same hustle and they are hustling.
Well, we wanted to talk to you because you bike all over the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this very unique perspective of what it's like to use our roads in ways that not a ton of people do compared to maybe how many people drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we want to start with like, what are your least favorite or the worst places in the city to ride your bike?
Well, an interesting part of my job is I look at it two ways. One is that I'm getting paid to be as fast and efficient as possible. So I really have to look at the infrastructure less as how convenient is this as a cyclist and more as how can I take this entire almost like game board and figure out how to run it as efficiently as possible, which means I have to sit in some dangerous zones. One of the main streets that's a real advantage to get across downtown is actually Broadway. because downtown is set diagonally and Broadway provides a straight shot and an angle to cut blocks out. But Broadway's essentially what they call a strode, right? I mean, it's a four lane and they tell you to go 25-30, but you put a four-lane straight
road.
Nobody
goes 30.
Nobody does it. Nobody does it. So if you take a lane, I mean, you have to take the lane. And that's kind of a dangerous situation. And that would be like the strode problem, right?
Okay.
The other issue are the parts of town where you really can't cross efficiently on a bicycle. And I would say the main issue, one of my least favorites, is anytime I have to go north to south or south to north in Cap Hill. With street parking, multiple stop signs, and some pretty quick thoroughfares, 18th, 17th, 13th, and 14th, they're efficient, but they're fast.
They're really, for cars, they're super fast.
And you have no line of sight crossing them.
Yeah.
It's like
gun it and pray.
Correct. Correct. That's, yeah. So not a big fan of a north to south ride in Cap Hill. And then Broadway gets to be a pain in the butt. You're like kind of flying by the seat of your pants and dealing with a lot of road rage because they're like, why are you on this road? There are millions of other roads in Denver. I don't need a cyclist hogging a lane on this road I want to do 50 on.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, we're talking about Cap Hill going north and south. We're talking about also biking on Broadway. The Broadway bike lane has been in the news recently. That's the biggest bike infrastructure project the city's managed to finish recently.
Yes.
How do you feel about the Broadway bike lane?
Mixed feelings?
Tell me about them.
On one hand, I'm absolutely stoked. I am very stoked. Like I said, Broadway presents a logistical issue. It is probably the most convenient method to crisscross several chunks of our central core of the city. And it's been incredibly dangerous. By putting that bike lane in, you have created a protected area, which I'm a big fan of. And I'm also a big fan of like the red turn signals and everything, increasing visibility.
Yeah.
The issue is a protected area is a double-edged sword in that when you create barriers between you and traffic, on one hand, that's great. But on the other hand, it's the same issue that Cap Hill presents with street parking. There's no sight lines, so drivers just don't see you. So you have to be aware of conflict zones. And if something comes up, you're in a very limited space. You don't have an entire lane of traffic to maneuver. If an obstacle comes up,
you're stuck.
You're stuck. So it really, it kind of traps you. If I'm cycling at a high rate of speed, I'm probably not going to use that protected bike lane.
That's what I was thinking. Because Paul, we've talked about this bike lane quite a bit on the show. It's a commuter lane, or it's something that like not novices would use, but people not going, you know what? I don't know how to explain it.
Right.
I feel like you guys use it differently. You want to be out in traffic so you can maneuver more, basically. That's safer?
Yeah. And
well, maybe not safer.
I know. I was like,
maybe
I don't know.
Faster.
Faster?
There's two schools of thought to cycling. If I'm going to be out there cycling at a normal pace, doing mm-hmm. normal things, which unbelievably I really enjoy doing when I'm not getting paid to go very fast. It makes a lot of sense. It's good. It's designed for that. But the other school of cycling thought is if you're going to be moving with traffic quickly, then you need to be very present. You need to be seen. And this is going to sound wacky, but a lot of times if I'm moving quickly, the way I'm going to ride a bike is to actually be very visible and somewhat unpredictable. It's like the driver who hits a tree. That's the only tree for 5 miles. Like, it's just kind of like, you know, out of sight, out of mind, and you could focus on it. But if you're a cyclist doing it, everything by the book, right side of the lane, you know, everything like that, it's very easy to zone them out.
Yeah.
So by being unpredictable, you're making yourself more visible, maybe.
Exactly.
Or you're demanding some attention.
Exactly.
In the lane.
And in that, and I know that sounds wacky, but that's actually...
No, but it makes sense because like you said, visibility is a huge component of this. Like mm-hmm. I have a toddler and we talk a lot about cars can't see you. This is a conversation we have a lot. Watch
yes.
because cars can't see you. And even when we were on Broadway the other day, we're crossing the bike lane as pedestrians getting out of the car. I'm like, you have to look for bicycles too. But it's like, it's so true. They're not going to see a toddler, but they're not going to see a guy on a bike either.
And you can become invisible. And right. when you become invisible, that is a dangerous place to be.
Let's flip this conversation around, talk about some of the best places to bike, like the places you really love biking or particular neighborhoods you think are like, just, they just got it right.
I have to say that I am a, well, first off, this may not apply perfectly, but I am a massive fan of what Denver has done with its waterways, protecting riparian habitats and putting bike paths in there. Denver has one of the most interesting, astounding bike infrastructures off-road that I've seen in just about any city. It's really incredible. Like, for example, I told you I was living in Brighton for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually get on a bicycle in Brighton and ride all the way to Watergate Canyon on a separated bike path.
I looked this up this morning. I knew we were going to talk about it. Going to Brighton, I saw it was a two-hour ride to Brighton. Do you make that ride on the South Platte Trail?
Yes, I do, and I adore it.
It's nice.
It's a great ride. There's the gauntlet. I call it the gauntlet. That's where you go between the water treatment plant and the...
Yes.
And but it's kind of a hidden gem because nobody gets through that. It smells atrocious.
Bad?
It smells bad.
Oh, the Commerce City area. Yeah. I was just on that part of the trail a few weeks ago. It's really, it's pretty gnarly.
It's pretty gnarly.
There are some spots that you don't feel great.
But you clear past that, and I'm telling you, you could go on a Sunday afternoon, 80 degrees, and you go south of Alameda, and that bike path is just, or Cherry Creek bike path, choked with people, right?
Yeah.
But you go up there, I'll see bald eagles, deer. It's just really mellow. It's beautiful. So I have to say, I'm a big fan of our bike path system. That's really incredible. As far as roads go, I love 16th Street in Cap Hill, as far as going east-west.
Oh,
16th
just north
Avenue,
of
you're correct.
Colfax?
Yeah, 16th Avenue. Yeah.
It is nicer.
Big wide lanes.
It's less busy for cars for, mm-hmm. I mean, probably part of it is the bike infrastructure.
Right. But. And it, you know what? It's designed in a fashion that doesn't encourage speed.
Yeah.
17th and 18th are your flyways. And so everybody's taking those. So 16th Street is this perfect, really honestly, logistically, in a lot of ways, it's a proper bike street. And I love that. It takes out a lot of those impact points. It's designed in a fashion that drivers are going to handle it a little slower, and they're very aware of the fact that it's heavily trafficked with bicycles, which lends to making you less invisible.
Hmm.
And I feel like it kind of gets avoided a little bit by cars because of that, because it feels a little bit more for bicycles.
Right.
I remember during the pandemic, I rode on that street, and I was like, this is awesome. It's one of those like moments where you're like, this is why people ride their bikes.
This one's going to sound a little wacky, but I actually really like the way they did Stout and Champa Street in Five Points. And then it turns into 31st, 32nd, and Martin Luther King. Because those have some very dedicated bike lanes and you're very visible. And I like that. And there's two lanes for traffic to maneuver. So generally they're pretty courteous. You have to be aware of dooring.
Mm.
Oh God, I've heard some nightmare stories about that.
But in a sense, it's a very convenient pathway and it's spaced out accordingly to make you both visible, but very convenient to go through on a bicycle. I utilize those two a lot.
So we have some good bike infrastructure.
I really think Denver actually does a very good job comparatively. As far as bike infrastructure goes, is it perfect? No.
Sure.
Absolutely. But what is bike versus infrastructure but a conversation? Everybody has an idea, and every idea has flaws. And yeah, and you look at Denver, it's at a disadvantage in a couple of ways. It's a very spread out city. It's a very car centric city. You look at a city like Seattle, San Francisco, it's a very dense population, very walkable. Denver is not designed that way. And it's only been the last couple generations that we've ever really had a discussion of how to make it accessible. I mean, look at Colfax. I mean, Kerouac, you know, immortalized it as the street that just goes and goes and goes. But that's the heart and soul of Denver. They made a movie in the 70s called Vanishing Point about Denver, driving from Denver to San Francisco and all that. It's a car-centric city. And also it's an outdoorsy city. Which means your selection of cars is typically giant SUVs, pickups. You've got the deer grates. You've got, you know,
mm-hmm. people can't see you. I mean, for sure, talk about visibility. Right. Those larger trucks.
So Denver comes at a competitive disadvantage in this scope of things.
I want to circle back though, because you mentioned the trails along the waterways. Paul, we talked a lot about the Cherry Creek Trail, and there's this spot, sure, this pain point. Can you describe it? I'm sure, Matt, you've been on it.
Well, yeah, I can. And I have some new information to share. But longtime listeners of the show will know I talk about the Cherry Creek Trail all the time. It's like one of my favorite things about Denver, one of the first things about the city I fell in love with. It's so beautiful. It's our bike highway. It's so useful. But there's this one spot that you're alluding to, which is right on First Avenue at University, just north of the Denver Country Club, where the trail, which normally hugs the creek, it juts off the creek and instead follows First Avenue.
Like shoots so you out onto...
It's a two-lane bike sidewalk between a big fence along the country club's parking lot and this four-lane...
Spear.
Road, which is... pretty intimidating.
Yes.
I mean, this, you know this spot.
That is my least favorite part of the entire trail. I intimately know it.
And not only is it the worst part of the trail, it's the only bad part of the trail, in my opinion. And it's horrifying.
Yeah. It ruins an otherwise really nice ride through the center of the city.
Yeah. Well, and here's what I have to share about this. I was talking to our friend Stuart Anderson of Transportation Solutions, which is this like transportation management contractor. They work with the city on like transportation planning. And with us on transportation related content, like our live event coming up at the end of this month. We'll put a link in the show notes. But Stuart, he's been around this conversation for a long time about this particular part of the trail. And he told me that he has been working on this for 20 years, trying to negotiate with the country club and with the city. And at one point he tried to get the city to enforce its right-of-way along the creek, because apparently there is some legal precedent for that.
Because the creek is behind the gated walls of the country club.
Presumably it goes between some holes on their golf course, but instead the trail goes along this fence. So he's been fighting for this, and he just says the club just has never budged. It will not budge an inch, and their current best plan to make this a safer stretch of the trail is to actually take space away from the median on First Avenue, which is actually a historic landmark, because it's part of
our parkway system.
Our parkway system, which dates back to Robert Speer and City Beautiful. So they're going to take some of that historic median, because the Denver Country Club will not give even an inch of their parking lot up for the safety of that
stretch
of the trail.
And we couldn't cut into those four lanes or whatever.
Yeah.
We have to like probably lose some trees.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna lose some trees. Exactly. We are gonna lose trees.
And that's what makes that part of the city so beautiful.
Isn't that crazy?
It's wild.
But also the country club, I mean, it predates the city around that in that area too. So
we've seen eminent domain used for much lesser things.
I wonder what could happen with this one. I think everyone who's ever biked on the trail, everyone who's ever studied transportation in the city knows this is an issue, but the country club just will not budge.
You think about the clientele of the country club, you've got a lot of political pull there.
For sure.
Not
for
as many cycling.
That's why.
Matt Sanchez, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Hey, I wanted to ask your help with something. We're having Mayor Mike Johnston back on the show later this month, and I want to know what you think we should ask him. What questions do you have for the mayor? The Mayor Mike hotline is open. Leave us a voicemail or send us a text at 720-500-5418. Again, that number is 720-500-5418. That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed this show, why not take a minute to tell a member of the Denver Country Club about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See ya! Almost as scary as us poking the bicycling bear. What are we thinking? I'm just kidding.